The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Booker Tov, into the 9 days. You know what that means, Howard? There's only 2 more shopping months until Rosh Hashanah.
Is that? I was wondering what it meant, but at least now we know the religious significance of it, Anthony. Thank
exactly,
you.
Exactly. Right. So we're into the 9 days, and we'll talk a little bit about Prime Minister Netanyahu trying to promote the whole atmosphere of the 9 days by talking about the time to embrace seafood. So perhaps we'll talk about that a little bit later.
All right. Interesting indeed. Final list for the September election have been submitted, and there were a few last-minute surprises. Tell us about this.
Well, the last-minute surprises really came in the form of the right-wing parties that we all thought that many of us thought would all unite under Ayelet Shaked's leadership in that right-wing coalition that's been built. And at the end of the day, Otzma Yehudit and Zehut, 2 of the smaller right-wing parties, decided not to join the right-wing coalition. And so effectively what we were left with lots and lots of shenanigans going on right until the very last moments, people at the place where the list had to be finalized, and meetings going on around the edges, and some veiled threats being issued. There was apparently quite an interesting event that took place on Thursday night before the lists were finalized. But ultimately, Ayelet Shaked now has her, what they call the United Right. She's the leader of that coalition group, which includes the Rafi Peretz, what was Yisrael Beiteinu, and of course the New Right Party, which she and Naftali Bennett put together. So they went in together, whereas the other smaller parties on the right wing decided to go it alone, perhaps to their detriment. If we believe the opinion polls that were just published this morning, then those 2 right wing parties which decided in the end not to come in under the United Front of the right wing will apparently fail to pass the 3.25% required to get any seats in the Knesset at all. So it looks like they've done themselves absolutely no favors about deciding not to come into that right-wing coalition. As for the rest of the lists, it went pretty much according to plan, according to what we had expected. We've got Ehud Barak's new party gone in together with Meretz. Now they've joined up together. And of course the Arab parties, which ran as 2 separate parties in the last election, once again joined up together, and they've now got a united Arab bloc that they've come in together. So those are the developments that went on before the lists were finalized on Thursday. And of course the latest opinion polls are very, very interesting because they show that the Likud will win, instead of 35 seats that they had the last time, they will win 31 seats this time, if that's what, if the opinion poll actually represents the reality of what will come out. And it shows that Kahol Lavan, which won 35 seats the last time, will now only win 29 seats. So quite a dramatic reduction in the number of seats for the larger parties, whereas Avigdor Lieberman's Yisrael Beiteinu party is one of the big winners. He goes from 5 to 10 seats. So he's really one of the big winners in the opinion polls. The religious parties more or less staying the same. The Arab parties, even though they've combined together, more or less staying the same. They won 10 seats between the 2 of them last time around, and they're now predicted to win 11 seats. But the Democratic camp, which is the merger of Meretz and the new the Israel Democratic Party of Ehud Barak, they're predicted to win 7 seats, whereas Meretz by itself only won 4 seats the last time. And of course, the United Right Party, I think, is one of the big winners. They are predicted to win 11 seats in the Knesset if the election was held today, according to the opinion polls. Whereas, of course, the Rafi Peretz party, which was the only one that actually won seats in the Knesset last time around, only won 5 seats. So that seems to be the party that's going to probably be one of the big winners. And, of course, you know, the bigger parties are going to all seemingly reduce the number of seats that they won last time around. So the question is, what does this mean in September once the elections have been held? And how will a government be formed, if at all? And, you know, from where I'm sitting, it looks as if though it's going to be, if anything, more difficult to form a government with this current situation than it was the last time around. And we already know that the last time around was impossible to form a government. So it's going to be very interesting to see. If I was to really stick my neck out and try and make a prediction on this, and I'm going to do that right now, which is really not my style, but I'm going to do it anyway. I think that the only way that a government can be formed is if Kahol Lavan and Likud join together to form a national unity government. They, between the two of them, will have at least 60 seats, probably 61 or 62. And if they join together, they would easily be able to attract the United Right Party and also Avigdor Lieberman's party, providing that the ultra-Orthodox parties are not part of the coalition. Lieberman will sit with them. But the Lieberman's party has 10, and the ultra-Orthodox parties have around 15. So it's kind of you know, a similar kind of number of seats, no matter which of those two decide to join the coalition. But I think that the only way in which this national unity government can be formed is if Prime Minister Netanyahu steps aside, or is pushed aside, or is no longer a leader of the coalition government. I think that that, to me, seems the only possible way in which any sort of government will be able to be formed following the September 17th election. So I'm sticking my neck out to say that that's what I think will happen. It'll be very interesting to see how wrong I'm going to be.
Interesting indeed. Well, let's see if it, I mean, it's crazy because you, if we land up in the same situation again in September, it is just, I don't know. I don't know how anybody would cope. Certainly, I don't think we're going to be talking about it again. They must sort themselves out, get a government, and then we're done. King Abdullah of Jordan is reported to have refused to meet or speak to Prime Minister Netanyahu. Why is he refusing?
Well, this was a report that was published in an Arab newspaper, and apparently Netanyahu requested an in-person meeting as well as a conversation with King Abdullah, both of which were refused. It does seem quite strange, but I also think that this election period is contributing towards foreign leaders being very, very cautious indeed about their interactions with Prime Minister Netanyahu. There have been a lot of reports about Netanyahu trying to be seen on the international stage as much as possible in order to convince voters to vote for him because of his international presence and the stage that he commands as an international diplomat. So there have been talks about him trying to meet with President Putin and to meet with other world leaders who it is believed, at least by the Likud, may well promote Netanyahu and may well promote the Likud into being able to get more seats. So I'm just wondering to myself whether whether King Abdullah has not fallen into that kind of way of thinking and decided to himself that until such time as the election takes place, he doesn't really want to be seen with Netanyahu in order to promote his chances of having a better election result in any way. Having said that, we do know that Abdullah and Prime Minister Netanyahu are not necessarily the best of friends. And Abdullah also made it quite clear that he wasn't interested in taking part in this Camp David leaders conference that we discussed last week and that was denied by the White House. But he saw it as enough of a possibility to already say that he was not interested in getting involved in that. To attend just for the pictures was the quote that I saw in the newspaper, that he thought it would be more of a photo opportunity than a meeting of any substance at all. However, having said all of that, we do know that King Abdullah will do exactly as President Trump requires him to do because of the fact that he is so dependent upon the U.S. administration for funding. And as long as, you know, he gets along with the U.S. administration, then, you know, he will be supported financially. And of course, the U.S. administration does have it in its interests to promote Abdullah to a certain degree, because Abdullah is seen as the leader of the Arab world where the Jerusalem holy sites are concerned. He is the chairman of the Waqf. The Waqf is the religious council that is responsible for all of the Muslim holy sites in Jerusalem. So he has a certain position in the Arab world as a leader of some sort because of his position in the Waqf. And so obviously the U.S. administration is eager to try to promote that and to try to support that as much as possible. And here is Abdullah flexing his muscles and refusing to meet with Netanyahu. It doesn't seem to have been very, very widely reported, and I would have thought that Abdullah probably would have liked to have had more widely reported than it really was. As far as Netanyahu is concerned, he kind of pretended as if though this never really happened. But I'm guessing that there's probably some element of truth to this report.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And finally, the Israeli cabinet met yesterday in Eilat. And that was part of the government's drive to renew and redevelop the city. What are the plans for Eilat? I mean, I know we've just heard about the new airport.
So this is where Prime Minister Netanyahu decided that it was time to embrace seafood. And not because we're in the 9 days, but because he feels that Eilat could potentially benefit a great deal from developing food from the sea. And developing that more as an industry in Eilat, because one of the things that Eilat really lacks is industry. It really lacks places for people to work. It has very little development in terms of commercial opportunities. Most of Eilat is really dependent upon the tourism industry, on the hotels that are there. Most of the city of Eilat are linked in some way or another to the tourism, to the hotels, to the attractions that are in Eilat. The airport situation that we discussed has really not helped the city of Eilat at all, because even though they've opened the new Ramon Airport, which is about a 20 to 30 minute drive away from the central part of Eilat, and it's of course a brand new, spanking new, fancy airport, but the point is that it's a lot further away from the city than the old airport was. And in conjunction with that, we also spoke about the fact that Sde Dov in Tel Aviv, the airport that was the main gateway to Eilat from Tel Aviv, has also been closed. So it makes it more difficult to travel to Eilat from both sides, from Tel Aviv as well as from Eilat itself, because of the airport facilities having been changed. And that's considered to be a huge barrier for people, tourists who were wanting to go to Eilat. It's considered to have really been erected a huge obstacle now to convince people to go to Eilat, because the truth of the matter is that a lot of people can get a very, very nice holiday outside of Israel, places like Cyprus and Crete and elsewhere in Greece. They can go there and have a very good holiday at a much lower price than the cost of taking a family or even going on your own to Eilat. And there was talk about a train line connecting Eilat to central Israel, and Netanyahu spoke about that at the cabinet meeting yesterday. And he also spoke about infrastructure development, where the government is planning to upgrade health services and upgrade transportation infrastructure and just develop further tourist industries and make the coastal strip more accessible to the public and to improve it. I think that Eilat is really in need of a huge facelift, especially the hotels that have become a little dated. They haven't seen a new development in some time. And of course, the fact that Eilat really doesn't have anything else to turn to in terms of commerce and industry. And I think that it's going to be really important that this idea of seafood as a basis for developing industry Eilat is really taken on board, and potentially other things as well. The problem, of course, with Eilat is that the transportation from the central part of Israel is costly, and it's far, and it's not simple. And so that's really what prevents Eilat from being developed more than it is at the moment. But let's hope that the government will be successful in helping not only the people of Eilat, but Israel as well, to develop Eilat a little further.
Anthony Reich, it is 8 o'clock. This is where we leave you. We will speak to you tomorrow, same time, same place. Here is your news with Zanati.